This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon, it is 1:05 and I will be horsing around today, literally putting a cat amongst the pigeons. A very controversial subject. I'm sure that you're going to have thoughts about it one way or another. Stay with me, it'll be interesting as we go through until 2:00. Yes, we are talking cravings. 1:06 here on Joy 94.9. Thank you to Matthew Thompson for the news. And thanks also to his able assistant in the newsroom today, who's, I think we'll call him the news producer. Thanks to Mark and the team for Techno Gaze, of course, another very enlightening program. I learn more every week on that program. Well, they say it's horses for courses, folks, but is that an entree or a main course? That is the question we're posing today. Horse meat DNA was found this week in burgers sold in Tesco in the United Kingdom. Tesco, a large supermarket chain, and it seems this is not the only outlet selling horse meat. 10 million burgers have been taken off shop shelves and after the revelation that beef products from the three companies in Ireland and Britain contained horse DNA. Most had only small traces, but one burger of a brand sold by Tesco had a meat content that was almost one-third horse. Britain, of course, was collectively outraged at the thought of eating their ponies, but in many cultures and societies around the globe, horse meat is in some cases revered. Horse is the major source of protein in only a few countries, notably in Central Asia, but forms a significant part of the culinary traditions of many others, from Europe to South America and Asia. The top 8 countries consume almost 5 million horses a year. And for the majority of mankind's early existence, wild horses were hunted as a source of protein. This is going to be a controversial subject, and I'm sure that you are going to have an opinion about it one way or another. That opinion is not about the transparency around the percentage of horse meat in the burgers being sold in Tesco in the United Kingdom. That is a secondary issue to this first big issue. And that issue is, in fact, should we eat horse? What is the block? What is the mental block, the emotional block around us eating horse? We eat crocodile. We eat kangaroo. We eat emu. We eat pretty much anything that we can get our grubby little hands on. As somebody just said on a Facebook post, I'll walk in the door, if I can put it near the flames, I'll eat it. So should we, in fact, ladies and gentlemen, eat horse? Do you have any moral obligation to eating horse? Do you have an emotional obligation, emotional problem with eating horse? It is just another animal on four legs that can be farmed just like anything else. We're going to explore the taboo around eating horse today. We're going to speak with somebody whose family is European, whose in-laws are European in Switzerland, and who quite enjoys a bit of clippity-clop on the plate. We are also going to speak to a chef who, when he devised a menu that was featuring horse for a select dinner, for a select few, received death threats at his restaurant, to not just to himself, but to his family. And we'll also speak to another controversial fellow. His name is Paddy McHugh. He is a camel farmer. and is responsible for some of the production of camel that is exported to the Middle East. I have a question around the consumption of camel, the consumption of horse. How would this go towards solving some of the poverty issues? And can you imagine if those 4.7 million burgers or 10 million burgers or whatever it was that have been taken off the shop shelves in the UK simply because they can contain traces of horse DNA, would they not be put to good use for those that don't have anything to eat? I don't want to get on a moral soapbox, and I don't want to get on a lefty soapbox, but I think there are some very interesting questions that we can ask today. I did a bit of research around the taboo around why we don't eat horse. Pope Gregory III in 732 AD, so, you know, a good 13 or so hundred years ago, began a concerted effort to stop the ritual consumption of horse meat in pagan practice. In some countries, the effect of this prohibition by the Roman Catholic Church have lingered, and horse meat prejudices have progressed from taboos to avoidance to abhorrence. In other parts of the world, horse meat has had the stigma of being something poor people eat and is seen as a substitute for other meats such as pork and beef. When I was growing up, poor people ate rabbits, and now rabbit in restaurants is highly prized and very expensive. Would it also surprise you to know that Australia is the fifth largest producer of horse meat in the world, and behind only Mexico, Argentina, Kazakhstan, Mongolia, and Kyrgyzstan? Those five countries that are prized and known for eating horse. A correspondent already has said, and thank you to whoever you are, I don't have a number, why not eat horse meat? What's the difference? I come from the country. I have family and friends can't eat the chooks I grew in the backyard and then killed them, cooked them, yet they can eat Kentucky Fried Chicken. It is emotional stuff, but technically, what's the difference? I share your thoughts. You know, we pretty much eat everything else. I'd really love to hear from you today. I'd like to know your thoughts around the consumption of clippity-clop. We're going to explore this discussion, and we are going to be controversial. I'm not scared to be controversial, because I think it is a discussion that we should have. We eat everything else. Everything else is now grown and is rare breed and all of that. And, you know, a few years ago, we wouldn't have eaten offal. Offal is now highly priced and highly prized in restaurants. I'd love your thoughts. 0427 JOY949 is a number for an SMS. You can email onair@joy.org.au. You can phone 1300 569 949. That's 1300 JOY949. And give us your thoughts. There's people who are willing to take your call. Or you can tweet to cravings_joy949. A big program coming up where we discover this, or discuss indeed, an issue that many would see as controversial. In the meantime, maybe this song might lead us to the solution. What we'll be doing in 5 years' time, we'll be in fact eating horse. This is Noah and the Whale with 5 years' Time. Here on Cravings on Joy 94.9, it is 12 minutes past one.
Joy 94.9.
You're here on Cravings on Joy 94.9, and I have opened a can of whoop ass, ladies and gentlemen. We are talking today about the consumption of horse. A big hullabaloo in Britain this week when it was discovered that some burgers being sold in Tesco, in one of their major supermarket chains, contained about 29% or thereabouts horse meat. And well, people have been morally outraged, and I can understand outrage from a lack of transparency that people didn't know that they were eating horse. But had you the choice, would you? 0427 JOY949. You can email onair@joy.org.au. You can phone 1300 569 949, 1300 JOY949, or you can send me a tweet to cravings_joy949. I've had a lot of tweets. I'll come to those in a moment. But Australians generally don't eat horse meat. And we're going to talk to a chef a little later who put together a menu about a year and a half ago or thereabouts, and did receive death threats for wanting to sell some horse meat, which is, I think, kind of crazy. We have a horse slaughter industry that exports to Japan, to Europe, and to Russia. Horse meat exports total around 25,000 tonnes here in Australia. And on June 30th, 2010, the Western Australian Agriculture Minister, Terry Redmond, granted final approval to Western Australian butcher Vince Gareffa to sell horse meat for human consumption. A restaurateur over there, Pierre Echalalin, announced plans to do a taster on Bastille Day and to put horse meat dishes on the menu if there was a good reaction. Comment from Mr. Redmond said the government would consider extending approval should the public appetite for horse demand increase. We have two horse abattoirs in Australia, both Belgian-owned, one in South Australia, one in Queensland. And somebody who's quite familiar with a bit of clippity-clop on the plate. His wife's family are from Switzerland. They've arrived this morning from Europe, and he's had a bit of discussion with them already. He's a freelance writer. He's a wine writer and food writer. His name is Mike Benny. Charming chap. He's on the phone. Mike, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Pete. How are you doing?
Good, thanks, mate. Your experience with horse meat. Give us a bit of a précis of how you first came to be eating it, and now it's almost a part of your family's protein diet.
Yeah, look, it is. I travel to Switzerland most years now for the past 10 years or so, and, you know, with the understanding that horse meat sort of has a taboo associated with it in Anglophone countries. But having a pretty open-minded approach to consumption of product, and I took it in my stride when I was presented with dried horse meat. The first way I consumed horse meat was in a kind of bresaola form.
Beautiful! For those that don't know, that's an air-dried, like an air-dried horse.
Yeah, correct. Yes. And most of the way that it is consumed is in a kind of a sliced sausage format. If you go to a Swiss supermarket, and I'm talking about the two major chains who sort of work within the Swiss countryside, there is a really large selection of horse meat available in really easily consumable form. And it sort of, you know, forms a very natural part of diet over there, in as much as that it's as readily available as an Italian salami or a Spanish ham, prepackaged and really consumable. Something you throw in the fridge, eat with a bit of cheese, whatever it might be.
Mm. So, Mike, I just want to sort of share some of the thoughts that we've had already. Melbourne gastronome, one of Melbourne's better known bloggers, says, yes, I've eaten it in Italy and in Australia, and horse is delicious when cooked right. I've also got somebody, I was shocked seeing it in the supermarket aisles when I returned to France at 21 years old. Many eat it there, many don't. That's a whole other aspect. There was an article in The Age that's been out in the last couple of days. It says it was eaten by people in Britain in the 19th century and in wartime. So I can't understand the moral outrage in Britain. And this one says from Pete Marchant, I've had it here and in Europe. It's very dark, it's very lean. The closest I would say is kangaroo. There is a Queensland export producer who exports it to Europe as well.
Yeah, look, as I said, it seems to be a very Anglophone taboo across Asia and through South America. It again forms part of a reasonably balanced diet of various proteins. Because of, I think, the context of horses being companion and sporting animals, it sort of changes the way people, I think about horse meat. And I'm not going to open another can of worms here, but in Southeast Asia as well, I've had the opportunity to try dog meat, and I mean, that really does sort of set a lot of people's hackles up when they hear this kind of thing. But I think it's more about, you know, accepting that there's some cultural norms that we find very acceptable with our own consumption of food that are changeable when you step overseas, and you have the right to decline politely.
Absolutely. You don't have to partake. I'm talking to Nick Pollard very shortly. My current guest is Mike Benny. He's a freelance writer around wine and food and spends quite a bit of time eating and drinking. Mike, I'm talking to Nick a little later, and he made a comment that I'm going to discuss with him. He said when he was training to be a chef and he first read that Australians were eating kangaroo, he was disgusted to think that we would eat kangaroo. And, you know, this is probably similar, and as you've just mentioned, across culturally. You know, if you go to Cambodia and you can eat spiders and you can eat crickets and you can eat, you know, various other insects. If you are in certain places in Central Asia, for example, like Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan, who produce horse for human consumption, you can eat curdled yak's milk, which nobody should ever have to go through. I'll give you that. So it's very much a cultural thing, and I think you're absolutely hit the nail on the head with the taboo around eating it is because we have an emotional attachment to horses as pets and as, you know, leisure friends.
Yeah, definitely. And I, you know, you've given a great, you know, balance in terms of the argument pro consuming a protein. If it's a, you know, an animal you feel strongly about, then the option is to not. In Switzerland, from my first-hand experience, I've been presented horse meat not only in the previous way that I mentioned it as an air-dried sausage, but also as a tartare.
Oh, yum!
Condiments added to it. Yeah.
Little quail eggs, some truffle oil, marvelous.
Yes. The whole the whole bit, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, also in small portions of flank with bechamel sauce. And, you know, it's almost a bit of a delicacy in some respects. It can be seen as a bit of a treat.
Mm.
And, you know, perhaps it's that culturally the association with horses isn't as strong. But when you think about your kangaroo comment just previously, saying that somebody was outraged about the fact that we ate kangaroo in Australia, it would be an interesting consideration that being a free-range creature that lives organically and is able to be hunted for consumption in a fairly benign way, there is a problem or environmental issue with the number of wild horses in Australia as well, which probably could fall under consideration of a fair game for another protein source for Australians who like wild camel.
Well, we're going to talk to Paddy McHugh in a little while as well. He's a Queensland businessman and entrepreneur who is sort of partially responsible for the market we have exporting camel meat. And one of the questions I raised earlier, Mike, we have a world who are overusing our resources. We have a world that is becoming increasingly poorer in the poorer parts of the world, in the developing world. Those 10 million burgers that Tesco's have tossed out, I'm sure would be welcomed in, you know, sub-Saharan Africa as a start, where there are people who are quite literally starving and have nothing. And so all of those cultural taboos, I think, would be turfed out of the window for the sake of surviving.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, that's a very salient point. And without, you know, raising the dichotomy between those who choose not to eat meat and those who do...
That's a whole other show, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, the waste culture which we breed into ourselves because of preconditioned ideas about our consumption of certain foods is a bit disappointing, to say the least. And when I heard that, you know, food that is, you know, opportune for people who don't have food to consume, regardless of your mores about your personal approach to what you consume, it does seem to be, you know, perpetuating this waste culture, which seems so frivolous and really understating other people's issues. Yeah.
One of our good friends here in Melbourne has said, "I can't believe they're wasting all of that meat. Can't Tesco just relabel it? To me, it's a bit like milk veal. The racing industry produces way too many horses, many of whom are killed. Why not eat it?" And I think these are sort of the discussion points that we're trying to get through during the program. Mike, I do have to run off and play some messages. I'm really grateful for your time, and I'm grateful for the input that you've been able to provide from a very first-hand experience about how it's almost becoming a rare treat to eat horse in places like Switzerland and elsewhere in Europe. I'm really grateful to have you on the phone to chat to us.
Thanks for having me on, Pete.
My pleasure. That's Mike Benny. He is a very charming, very erudite man who does get about a bit and does tend to know a little bit about what we eat and drink. We'll come back and continue this discussion with Chef Nick Pollart, who was one of those people who received death threats for simply putting a menu together with horse on it some 18 months ago. Keep the comments coming. 0427 569 949. 0427 Joy 949 is the SMS. You can email onair@joy.org.au, phone 1300 Joy 949, or you can send a tweet to cravings_joy949. Another email just before we go. If it's good enough for us to export to other countries, why not enjoy the fruit of our own country's labour? Let's encourage Aussie chefs to start getting creative with horse. We slaughter them for other purposes anyway. Why not make the most of their lives? That's from Matt. And Matt, you're raising points that I think we're going to hear quite a bit through the remainder of the program as we take you through to the Fender Bender Boys at 2 o'clock. Currently, it is 27 minutes past 1 here on Joy 94.9. I'm Pete Dillon, and I'm getting my clippy clop on today as we talk about eating horse. It's 27 minutes past 1.
Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Guy Grossi, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Yes, you are. It's Pete Dillon with you. 1:30 here on a Saturday afternoon. A beautiful, clear now Saturday afternoon in Melbourne, about 25 degrees outside, which is very, very lovely. And we have opened a can of whoop-ass on the program. I'm not scared to do that, but we're talking about the consumption of horse. As if you're just joining us, horse meat has been found in beef burgers on sale in the United Kingdom, in their major retail chains. But I guess there's a question of why the British have such a revulsion over the idea of eating horse meat. It's called hippophagy. H-I-P-P-O-P-H-G. why. So, hifovgi. It spread in Europe in the 19th century after famines caused several governments to license horse butcheries. The meat is still very commonly consumed in France and Belgium, as well as parts of Central Asia and South America. About 18 months ago, a very brave Melbourne chef decided to put together a menu that featured horse for a couple of small functions on a Monday and Tuesday night. And the reaction to that menu was extraordinary. It went as far as him receiving death threats. He's from the north of France. He joins us on the phone. Nick Pollard, good to talk to you.
Yes, how are you, Pete?
I'm very well, mate. Let's start with you grew up in the north of France, and horse was quite a common meat for your family to eat.
Yeah, so I'm just a small from a small village, just near Calais, and just on the border of Belgium. And yes, my family does eat more horse meat than beef meat, especially just after the mad cow disease. Everybody kind of turned towards horse meat than a beef meat.
And look, you brought up a very valuable point. You know, mad cow disease almost decimated the British beef industry for some time. So, I guess it was a safe meat to eat. The issue with the beef, with the horse in the burgers in Tesco's and elsewhere, I think, is around transparency. And I don't want to touch on that issue because I don't think that's the discussion we're having. Just a message here from, I think, Aloge. I think the key is diversity of meat rather than singling it out. Chicken, pork and beef. I believe diversity would create a larger market, which would precipitate the abuse of, wouldn't precipitate the abuse of farmed animals as farmers desperately try to cut corners to increase their profit margins. And look, a very valuable point. It was also brought up just before that, you know, there is a fairly large problem with feral horses in some of our high country, particularly up here in Victoria. And you know, why aren't we utilising the meat like we do with camels? Nick, you put together a menu that featured horse meat. You got the meat from Perth in WA, where the butcher that we spoke about just now was given licence to produce horse meat for human consumption. Talk us through how you put that together, and then what was the outcome? What happened?
I basically used a different cut of the animal, and I just prepared different dishes. So it was a raw, it was roast, it was pan fried, and it was a stewed. Just really trying to see the diversity of the different cut of meat and what we can do with the meat and everything. We're trying to do two dinners. That was a few years ago now, but We were going to do a dinner on a Monday and a dinner on a Tuesday, and I just cancelled the second dinner.
Mm-hmm. Why did you cancel the dinner?
We had about 50-60 protesters at our front door. Everything was really silent. Everything was really civilized. When they first arrived, actually, either teas and coffees, it was actually cold outside. Everything was really civilized. It was doing their job, and I was doing mine. You know, it was mutual understanding of what was going on. And so we did the dinner, and after that, you know, we had the chat, and I decided to cancel the dinner. So as a respect, I did what I had to do, and you know, I just.
So you deferred to these protesters. You fed them tea and coffee on the night they arrived at your restaurant because it was cold. You allowed them a silent protest, and then as a result of that protest, you cancelled the second dinner. Talk us through death threats that you received.
Yeah, so basically everything started probably a week later, where I started to have people leaving notes on the front door of the restaurant. So I come in the morning and there's a couple of letters under the door. But I think those people had no understanding, doesn't understand, will never understand. And I think I did respect the people who are against it. I did reply to a few emails. I did spoke to a lot of people. I went to see a lot of people. A lot of people came to me. There was a lot of discussion, a lot of different subject, the way the animal is killed, the way the animal is treated, everything. Mm. But there was a lot of emails and letters which I got from people. And some of those people just, you know, they doesn't want to be educated. I'm not a teacher. I don't want to educate people. But some of those people just doesn't want to be educated. And I think some of those people, you know, they're complaining about the way the animal is treated, but the way I got treated and the way my family got treated, the way my staff got treated, the way my reputation got treated, I think those people should not even be allowed to be near supermarkets, schools, all that kind of thing. Some of those things was pretty sick. And I would assume
these people would happily go out for breakfast and eat a couple of poached eggs without knowing the provenance of their eggs, that would happily go into Kentucky Fried Chicken and buy some chips that are cooked in animal fat, not knowing how that animal fat is both extracted and produced. So that causes me grave concern. Nick, there's a couple of food historians that have made some comments around this, both British. One is a woman by the name of Dr. Annie Gray, and she says the primary reason for not eating horses was their usefulness of beasts of burden and their association with poor or horrid conditions of living. A second one, food historian Ivan Day, said we have to remember at one point before railways, horses were the main means of transport. And then he goes on to say, and I think quite ridiculously, you don't eat your Aston Martin. No, because an Aston Martin, my friend, doesn't have four legs, a tail and a heart. An Aston Martin is a car. So I understand the emotional connection to the beast, but I wonder, you know, do you see this? And let's get your crystal ball out. Do you see going into the future that we will see a change in attitude and horse will become like crocodile, emu, kangaroo, and so forth and so on? It will feature on menus.
Yeah, I do think so. And I don't see why not. I really don't see why not. And I think there was as much controversy when when people started to eat kangaroo. And I think it would be part of that.
When we spoke earlier, you said that I think it was when you were growing up or when you were training as a chef, and you first read that Australians were eating kangaroo, you felt a sense of you were quite disgusted.
Yeah, I was like, you know, and after that, it's just a culture, you know. I grew up eating horse, and you know, 10 years old kid starting to eat kangaroo, and 10 years ago, yeah, I was pretty disgusted to hear, oh, they eat kangaroo in Australia. That's pretty disgusting. And you know, but after that, when you actually understand, learn about it, and your vision, it becomes a bit different.
Look, there is talk of people being criminally prosecuted in the United Kingdom and Ireland for the production of these burgers that contains the horse meat. Do you think this is an overreaction to? I obviously, the transparency thing is the important thing in that sense, that people needed to know they're eating horse and not doing it sort of unwillingly. But do you think there's been a bit of an overreaction to the fact that, you know, there's this moral outrage and a moral crusade to stop people eating horse, where in fact it's very endemic in a great many cultures?
I think it's more the lie. I think it's more the lie of it. I don't think that's really fair for people. It's like, you know, hiding meat for a vegetarian somewhere. I don't think that's really fair for people. I think that's really annoying, actually. I don't think it's really fair. And I think the supermarket or whatever should be severely amended for that.
Yeah, look, I question in some senses, you know, if we go to a supermarket here and we buy some pre-made burger patties, do we know, you know, entirely what is in those burger patties? And I would suggest that if we had a jolly good look at the way they were produced, we would find offal, we would find preservatives, we would find all sorts of things that we're not quite sure we would want to eat were they presented individually on a plate. And so not so much a lie, but that transparency issue, I think, is something that we need to address here as well. So if you were to go down to one of the two major supermarket chains and buy some burger patties in the meat section, would you in fact know what they contained?
I don't think I would. I don't think, even as a professional chef, I won't be able to, you know, to test the patty and just say, you know, there's this and this and this. I rarely go to supermarket and buy the meat.
Yeah, I don't, but I'm talking, you know, the general consumers do, unfortunate.
No, I don't think they will be able to say, you know, if it's beef and there's pork inside it, or, you know, I don't think anyone will be able to find what's exactly in there.
And likewise, you know, if we look at the two major burger chains in this country, with their claims to have Angus and Wagyu burgers, one wonders what part of the beef is being used to produce that, because as long as they're using something that comes from a Black Angus or indeed a Wagyu cow, and whether that's the hooves and the, you know, the bits that people don't want to eat being made into those burgers, there's no moral outrage when they bring out one of these burgers. So that sort of cuts into my question again about what's in the supermarket patties. Are we being advised? Are we fully knowledgeable what we're eating? Or could we in fact be eating things that we don't want to eat?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Nick,
that's what it is, I guess.
Nick Pollard is the chef at Brooks Bar in Melbourne CBD. I can recommend the quality of Nick's food. He is an exceptional chef with a wonderful ability to think outside the square. Nick, I'm really grateful for your time today. Thank you for taking part in the discussion.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
Have a good day.
That's Nick Pollard. He is the chef at Brooks Bar right here in the centre of Melbourne. He is somebody who received death threats for putting together a menu for containing horse meat, and we are discussing that very subject today, your moral abrogation or your moral outrage or not to the consumption of horse meat. 0427 JOY 949, send an SMS. You can email on air at joy.org.au. You can phone 1300 JOY 949 and speak to one of the guys outside. I think one of the mats is on the telephone, or you can indeed send a tweet to cravings_joy949. I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Should we or should we not consume horse meat, and is it simply a cultural taboo rather than something else? It's 18 minutes to 2 here on Joy 94.9. Very shortly, I'll be back with Paddy McHugh, who is a camel farmer producing meat from camels. Once again, thought about being something that we couldn't eat some time ago. 18 minutes to 2 here on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
A timely song to be playing today. That was Only the Horses by the Scissor Sisters. Pete Dillon with you here on Cravings on Joy 94.9, taking you through until 2 o'clock and continuing to stir the pot with this can of whoop-ass I've opened in the discussion around the consumption of horse meat. This week there are 10 million burgers taken off the shelves from Tesco and other supermarkets, retail chains in Britain, from burgers that were produced in Britain and Ireland that contained some 30% horse meat. Not talking about the transparency issue today, we are in fact talking through whether one would eat horse meat and what is our moral issue with it. But it's not only horse. We've mentioned crocodile, emu, kangaroo. We have a text message. What do you call horse meat? Cattle is beef, sheep is mutton or lamb, pig is pork. So horse is, I don't know. We'll see if we can find out the answer to that before 2 o'clock when the boys from Fender Bender come and join you. That track, probably a bit tongue-in-cheek, I know, but does lead me further into the discussion around the consumption of things that aren't traditional and do we have a taboo about them. Paddy McHugh is a Queensland businessman and entrepreneur who hopes to persuade Australia to capitalise on its wild camel population to create a lucrative business selling milk and camels into the Gulf region. He says, we want to turn it around from a negative and produce an industry for Australia to export meat and milk to the United Arab Emirates, to Saudi Arabia, Qatar and Kuwait. It's got huge potential. The Australian government plans to spend some $20 million on a cull over the next 4 years in a bid to control its camel population. Australia is home to an estimated 1 million camels, but the figure is set to double within 8 years if left unchecked. That particular businessman and entrepreneur, Paddy McHugh, is on the phone from Queensland. Paddy, good afternoon.
G'day, Pete. How are you?
Mate, good to talk to you. Let's start with how you came to camels as a business.
I've been involved with camels for sort of 38 years now, I suppose. It's a fair while. And I've done a bit of everything with them, from walks across deserts to selling them overseas and organising camel race events and all that sort of stuff. And for many, many years now, I've sort of thought, we're an arid land, we've got this animal that was given to us, and it's a gift this country's been given, you know. And why don't we farm them? Why don't we harvest them and use the meat? I've seen it eaten all over the world, but Australia tends to turn its nose up a little bit at it, and I can't understand why.
Well, it's a similar discussion we're having today about horse meat, Paddy, and I'm not sure how you would react to that as well. But I ate some camel prosciutto some years ago in central Australia, and it was magnificent.
Yes, look, camel meat is very good red meat, and if it's grown the correct way and killed and prepared the correct way, you can barely tell the difference between it and normal beef meat.
And I wonder, Patty, if that's probably some of the issue that, that people have with the consumption of horse and indeed the consumption of anything else. Growing up, we ate a lot of rabbit, for example, and there was a bit of a discussion I had this week with somebody who I then discovered was a vegan who was talking about rabbit and farmed rabbits being similar to battery hens. It's all about the way that a particular protein is produced, I think, that, that causes more issue than, in fact, that the fact that we used to ride them at Gymkhana.
True. Produced and perceived, I think, and we are traditionally of English descent, I suppose. That's changing now. And we're cattle and sheep, and don't look sideways at horses or camels or anything else like that. You know, there's nothing wrong with that meat whatsoever. We just have to have this change of attitude, I suppose. It's a fine red meat. It's very lean meat. It's easy to eat. It's easy to obtain. We just have to change the psychic of the people in Australia and stop this stupid slaughter that's going on, letting them rot in the paddock. I mean, we're shooting a potential $30 million export industry every year and letting it rot on the ground. We must be a very wealthy country to be able to do that. I find it obscene.
If we were to call horse meat tripe, Paddy, or camel meat tripe, somebody's just said part of people's outrage is an emotional association. Perhaps giving horse meat a name, something other than horse, it will be slightly better accepted. So if we were to call it tripe, or if we were to call it something else, do you think that would make a change? And it's probably the same question with camel. If it wasn't called camel and it was called, you know, elderflower, do you think people would eat it?
Well, that's quite possible, you know. I mean, look what they did with carp. They changed the name of that to a different sort of name, and everybody took it on and started eating it. Maybe we should look at that with camels. I've never really thought to do that, but look, the market really is, it doesn't have to be, the name doesn't have to be changed. The market's huge in the Middle Eastern region. It's just phenomenal.
How much do we export?
Sorry?
How much camel do we export as a nation?
No. Oh, sorry, I beg your pardon. We do export a little bit. There's an abattoir in South Australia that exports a bit to the Moroccan army, and there is one in Caboolture in Queensland that exports to North America. But, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg of what's out there.
And this issue, and I think in some senses it is an issue with an increasing feral camel population that ultimately will sort of wreak some sort of damage or havoc on our natural resources, particularly in the north of South Australia and elsewhere?
Not really. I think there's two things you have to think of here. Camels do far less damage to the environment because of their padded foot than cattle or sheep do.
Yep.
And the other one is, when you put it into perspective, there's a million camels, maybe a little bit more. There's 40 million cattle, 100 million sheep. Goodness knows how many donkeys, pigs, goats and everything else that roams this land. Why can't we wild harvest? Why can't we put the camels behind the wire and breed and run them just like we do cattle and sheep? We certainly can, but it's an attitude of greedy people that are in senior government positions that are doing this, and it's just ludicrous.
You're preaching to the converted, I'm afraid, with me, Paddy, because I will try anything. As long as it had a foot, a face or a tail, I'll eat it. And that pretty much covers everything that roams the earth. I think one of the big questions is around, as you mentioned just now, some perception, but also a lack of understanding of you know, what happens elsewhere culturally. I mean, if we look at the Middle East, for example, and certainly it's not the only space in the world that consumes camel. If we look at the Middle East and we look elsewhere, we'll find it's part of a cultural thing. It's a traditional thing. And as our own country is so young and so tiny in comparison to the rest of the world, we should be embracing all of this.
Absolutely. And look, in the last 3 years, I've received just short of 1,000 separate inquiries from 33 countries, not just the Middle East, looking for all sorts of products, from meat to milk to blood to the whole shooting match that's connected with the camel industry. We need to sort of look sideways and grow up a little bit in this country. We're a very spoilt nation in some ways, but we need to look sideways. We need to stop looking at just the mining industry and look at other products, other industries.
Absolutely.
And the camel's classic. I mean, the poor old Aboriginal, there they are sitting on a gold mine with a million camels in 60-70% of their land, and we're shooting it out from underneath them.
Absolutely. And look, we could get onto that very different soapbox today, Paddy, and talk about the havoc we do wreak.
Yeah.
I've got a message. John from Elstonwick has called in and said eating horse in countries such as Australia and the UK is more of a cultural and psychological taboo than other countries which enjoy a plethora of different types of meat. And I've also had a call from Sammy who said that she's a horse trainer and she would never, ever eat horse, but as a cattle herder in a previous role, she had no problem eating beef.
That's right. And look, it hurts me to kill camels to eat them, I must admit that, but it's a practical outcome that we need to address.
And look, it is. And if we consider the fact that we eat now our coat of arms, and we eat a lot of other a lot of other animals that are native and indigenous to Australia, as compared to camel, which is an introduced breed, like rabbits and that sort of thing. We almost have a responsibility now to ensure that we do manage that population, and if it is by human consumption, then so be it.
Without question, and as food security becomes more of an issue in the world, as the population grows, we will start to eat a lot of vastly different things to what we eat now, that's for sure.
And you did mention we are very spoiled, and I guess that's the point, that we are overly spoiled in the fact that we get to choose what we eat and what we don't. So, look, Paddy, I'm really grateful for your time and your contribution to today's discussion.
My pleasure, Pete.
And we'll talk to you again. That's Paddy McHugh. He is a businessman and entrepreneur from Queensland and somebody who has spent a great many years dealing with camel as a food source and a milk source. And he mentions a very valid point. It's something that I did want to get to that we're almost out of time for. It is important to consider the food security of not just ourselves, but our neighbours and the rest of the world. And if camel and horse are going to be part of that security that people do actually get to eat rather than starve, then I think it behoves upon us to explore all options. It is 5 minutes to two. I am getting a little bit on my high horse. 5 minutes more and the boys from Fender Bender will come and join you to talk all things vehicular. This is Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9. We'll have a few messages and come back and wrap this baby up.
Joy 94.9.
This is Cravings here on Joy 94.9. We are heading very close to 2 o'clock, where the lovely lads from Fender Bender will come and join you. But I just wanted to go through some of the discussion points that we've had today, and people have been very kind to email, text, and phone in. So thank you to those of you that have done so. Ed has said, Ed Charles, a very well-known Melbourne food blogger, has said, apparently people are eating meatballs instead. They are the dog's bollocks. Somebody else said, no, I haven't eaten horse, but I've eaten donkey saucisson in France, which is also another animal that we probably won't talk a lot about eating in the next little while. We did mention, Susanna, the name of the butcher in WA who has a license to kill horses for human consumption. I won't mention him again. There are a couple of abattoirs in Australia who are also producing horse from horse for human consumption. We've had a message from Kevin. Kevin, thank you. He says he's from Hurstbridge. I've been in and out of the car listening when I can. My issue would be how the animal is treated and produced, not what sort of animal it is. And I think that gets us, Kevin, to the very, very crux of today's discussion. As long as animals are treated in an appropriate manner, are treated fairly, and are treated well, then there's probably not a great deal wrong with us consuming horse meat. And as food security becomes an issue, so too does our acceptance of things that are perhaps outside of the realm is what is normal. Thanks to Paddy McHugh up in Queensland, one of my guests today, for joining us to talk about his experience with the camel industry and changing people's perception of camel meat. Thanks also to Nick Pallat, the chef who, as I mentioned earlier, received some death threats because he dared take on the idea of serving horse meat as a menu item or numerous menu items, and did cop some flack for it. Thanks also to Mike Benny, a charming chap who's eaten horse. There are many others of you who have wanted to contribute to today's program who have been out and about and munched on a bit of clippity-clop. Next week, I'm back to talk about programs to deal with food, TV programs. I have the esteemed pleasure of speaking with Marco Pierre White, who you may have seen on the odd ad on Channel 10. I'll also be speaking to Manu from My Kitchen Rules, another fellow who you might see on your television. So that's next week. We're talking all things chefs and business on TV. Thanks to Matt T for playing program support during the program today. We move on now to talk all things car, and I believe you're going to have a very pleasurable afternoon with the boys from Fender Bender. I'll be back next week. Until then, eat well, drink well. Goodbye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.